Welcome to this episode of George Doesn't Trusty, Angela's Brother, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle, one of the Lopez loco lovers. Normally joined by my co-host, Tim, when we break down episodes. And usually we don't have time because we schedule an interview and it doesn't work out. But I actually cleared time for him this time to do it. And he wasn't able to do it, unfortunately. It's one of the only times I've been able to actually schedule a time. So actually have a really good episode. So we're not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez where Angie's con man brother, Ray, comes to visit Angie and pay back money owed to Vic and George. But George is the first to see through Ray's scheme when Ray asks Veronica to tap into her inheritance to invest in a new company. That sounds like a terrible episode. I actually have a good one. I'm very excited. I'm joined by the creators of the Downriver people. Talked to you before, Matthew Fox, Adam Smith, formerly, I think, I don't even know, because this is like, quote unquote, volume two. But a while ago, Long Walk to Valhalla creators. But thanks for coming back on the show, guys.
Thanks dude.
Adam's all squiggly.
All right. We found out we weren't going to be talking George Lopez. Yeah, I think Matt had reached out to me and I saw the solicitation and I was very excited because I mean, obviously we talked at the time about A Long Walk, but I mean, I thought that book was like absolutely amazing and kind of how you guys were going to follow it up. And I think this is, I feel bad saying even better because it doesn't like diminish that, but this book's fucking like crazy. It's so good. I always hate like asking how it started, but I think if you read into it, if you read the book and kind of Adam's epilogue at the end and then kind of the foreword for you guys, it's obviously kind of a journey how this book came about. But like, what was the original idea and how did you guys decide to like team back up after Valhalla?
Initially, the book was supposed to be a heist book. It was supposed to be a sort of lighthearted romp, kind of. But as we started to think about who this character was that was performing this robbery, it just kind of changed into what the book eventually became. I had worked in a ski lodge in Alaska, and I thought it was strange how much money I had. And Matt and I had this idea of like, what would it look like if someone robbed this lodge? And yeah, it just kind of ballooned from there. I mean, it's those stupid writer questions of like, how did this guy get this lodge? Or how did this guy inherit this bar? And so forth and so on. And eventually just, I don't know, I got real sad. I wrote a bunch of stuff.
That's great. I mean, knowing that, and obviously it is out now. It just came out. So I can avoid spoiling any of the major stuff. But I mean, kind of where it goes, like this is a pretty like big emotional journey. But at the same time, and I think what you guys do amazing in this is, and a lot of reviews have hyped it in the sense that you guys kind of build quite a bit of tension early on and setting the tone, and where the book ends up is not like anything you would expect from the beginning, which is insane. And I think going in kind of blind in the idea that there's this larger horror element looming, I think some reviews have talked about, like, it's insane. How did you guys approach the building of the tension in the beginning, knowing kind of where the book was going to take the turn? I think we talked about this a lot on the show that like, I think horror is really hard to pull off in comics. I don't necessarily say like this is like a typical horror, but there is something you guys do again quite amazingly is building that tension early on with these like characters that you invest in, and then the kind of shift that happens around the middle of the book.
I mean, I think it's a lot of, at least on my end, is if you don't care about the characters that are in the story, you're not going to care what happens to them. And so if we want to do this big sort of twist, sort of at the midpoint and kind of take it in a different direction, if it's just someone that you don't give a shit about, then you're not going to care that it's happening to them. There's a sort of investment you're asking of the reader when they're reading something this long that you want it to be worth their time. And at least for me, the way to do that is to make an emotional connection to them.
And I think too that like, oh, we're both big, oh, sorry. I think we're both really big fans of thrillers that like international thrillers, you know, any kind of Korean thriller from the last 20 years is, you know, kind of the tone and the pacing that Adam and I wanted to do, or maybe close to something like a Coen Brothers movie where, you know, it starts off and, like, I think with Parasite, the movie Parasite, like, right in the middle is when everything completely, and I don't know that we were necessarily, like, wanting to pick on a specific, like, story or movie or trope with that, but yeah, I think we very desperately wanted to get to the horror as fast as we could, but at the same time, we wanted to make sure that the whole table was set, like, before we could, you know, flip it over, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think the idea even that it was, like, kind of a heist type thing originally, like, that is even a genre very much with, like, Coen's. It's all about, like, the characters and getting that to work. So you think of something like Ocean's 11, like, your investment is in these quirky people and getting it to work out. I mean, the heist is almost secondary in that. Mm-hmm. Same with horror, I think. Like, the dread and the repercussions of it don't work unless you have these characters that you care about. And I think having it set with the loss of the father early on, which is not spoiler, I mean, in previews, I think you ultimately get invested in the way you kind of, again, I think, Matt, for you early on in this, with the way you've approached the art and you're coloring this one completely, I think you had assist on Valhalla. Was that something as well? I think there's the moment with the police early on. It's really kind of the only bright scene in it. And that's like right around where things, again, start to, like, shortly after that is when things get more depressing. He loses the liquor and kind of that is the, like, driving element to, you know, where he ends up. I mean, was there something early on setting the tone with kind of the art, especially how you colored this book? A lot of it is like a, I wouldn't have you do it, like a dusty blue. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. I think it's funny. There's so many, so many logistical things that go into it that come in after you've addressed the emotional stuff. Like, you know, I've already drawn the scene, and when you look at the whole book, you know, it really only takes place over the span of, like, 3 days, I think. But there's really not very many breaks in that. Like, there was enough time for me to have the main character have, like, one change of clothes, I think, or two. And so, you know, in addition to having to sort of set the right atmosphere, tempo-wise and composition-wise for the different scenes, I also had to account for the fact that, like, you know, it starts off at night when they're having a, you know, a wake at the flatbed, and then that carries into him waking up the next morning, and that happens to be the scene where he goes and he gets liquor the next day. And so a lot of it comes from just thinking, like, you know, oh, I've got an outdoor day shot. So how do I want to, or a day scene, how do I want this to happen? And it was really the only, like, the first real scene of, like, violence that we were going to show, obviously as a negative. But there's one panel that really depicts the violence. And so I just kind of wanted to build up to it almost like a, you know, deceptively bright and cheerful after the funeral or the wake the night before and drinking. And, you know, you see the trailer where his father was found and the leftover of a successful suicide. And so the book wasn't going to get any nicer, but I think that I kind of needed that, you know, that break of a bright sunny day before things just really went to shit.
Yeah, and I love then that scene, especially like you said, when that kind of big act of violence, and even in this, you have, like, it outlined in pink, which is fucking brilliant. Like, it looks fantastic. But like you said, it kind of draws the attention to kind of the importance of this moment. And I mean, you hit on it, and I think early on, like, the kind of the first question I was, like, stumbling through, the you guys building that tension and pace. What makes this so great is, like you said, it you guys are doing this all over the course of, like, the 3 days, and there's literally so much, like, character building, but also kind of, like, intention and plot. You guys are doing this. Was that something, especially I guess for Adam, kind of getting that all in pace wise, like the amount of character building you have to do, like with Myers, to really invest in him. But not only that, when you do meet, I don't know if this was the mom and everyone else, that is like, it's crazy. I went back on the rereads of this and like, I was like, oh shit. Yeah. That happened in the beginning. Like there's so much you guys do. Was it really difficult, especially with the page count you guys were at, to get the pace down or know what you really wanted to get the effectiveness of kind of that third arc?
Yeah. There's this animated movie. I think it's called A Cat in Paris. And there's this really beautiful cold open where this cat is kind of wandering around the city, but then there's this breakfast scene with this kid and her mom. And there's just this really beautiful character shorthand. Like everything they say establishes who these people are without just out and out saying it. Like I adore Alex Garland and he's one of my favorite writers, but he's really bad at that. And like Annihilation is almost like sort of a joke when they're kind of canoeing down the river and she's like, I can tell you about all these people, you know, and it's just like this very big exposition dump of just information the watcher needs to know. And anytime I see something like that, it really takes it out of it for me. And so, I mean, I think I rewrote that opening scene with the three dudes talking about the flatbed over and over and over again, trying to get all the information there. And that opening scene with Zach and Sarah at the bar trying to establish like what kind of place this was, that was sort of very familiar, but also very revered locally, and what that means to someone like Myers, who at this point in his life doesn't know what he wants. And so like all those three moments are like very intentional, but took a very long time to, I feel like, get right. And sometimes you'll work on something and you get it right away. And then other times it'll take, you know, like a week. There was a scene in Long Walk. I don't remember what it was, but it just wasn't working. And I worked on it for days until I realized that I was building a house on like terrible foundation. And so I just completely changed the scene. And then all of a sudden it works better, but you kind of get married in your head to this idea that this is how it has to work. And it's just not true. It doesn't have to work anyway. You come up with these ideas and you can just scrap them if it's not working. So yeah, the character shorthand stuff is something that it takes a lot of time, but I feel like it's worth it, you know, especially when you're trying to do a character study like this.
And I think it's worth noting too that like when you see the finished product, like this book has a lot of like quiets and stuff that's it's told visually through a lot of very carefully picked up panels, but like all of that is in his script, and it's not specifically how I break it down, but all of the emotional beats are there. He just gives me free rein to squash and stretch that, you know. We allow me a certain number of extra pages. And this one, we said I could have 20 extra pages for the whole book. And he was going to write something between 160 and 180 pages. And then,
I think it's 184. And then Matt started drawing it. And, you know, we had this like, all right, it's going to be around about 200 pages. And so Matt was doing it and he was doing this beautiful job. And he was like, I think I still have a lot of pages. And I was like, oh no, dude, you've got like 10 now. you've already burned through a few of them, man. He's like, no, I haven't. And we went back and looked through and it's like, oh shit, we should.
Yeah, I was liberal at first, but like I was also saving pages as well for the end, because I was essentially thinking I'm gonna want the last, you know, big scene at the end of the book. I'm probably gonna add about 10 pages in there somehow. So I let myself have 10 pages for the rest of it. But other than that, like, that's something I just think is really unique in comics for a writer to, one, you know, trust me that much, which, you know, is something that he doesn't do with the other artists that he writes for necessarily, give them as much freedom as he gives me. But just like someone who writes a story so visually and at the same time is willing to not show it in the dialogue the way a lot of other writers do. Yeah, I just thought I would toot his horn a little bit.
Well, I appreciate it, dude. I was talking to someone this week about writing comics, and I was saying that when I'm writing the script, I'm writing it like especially in the case of Downriver People, I'm writing it to get mad excited to draw it. You know, it's like if in the panel descriptions, I can write a thing that I know he's going to love to draw, then it's just going to be better than however I wrote it. You know, it's not so much what the panels are, but it's like, is it making Matt stoked to draw it? And the only thing I ask in every book we do is that he draw one sequence where someone does something with their hands, because that's always the best.
Yeah, he likes me doing those little, like, because I think when we first met, I was super into...
Your hands are so easy to draw, too, right?
Right? Yeah. My way into, like, Western comics again, because I, you know, when I was a teenager, I would occasionally buy a comic book that I saw at a store, but I wasn't regularly keeping up with it. But, like, I got super into anime and manga in my teen, and then when I decided that I didn't want to go to school for animation and be an animator, I was like, oh, I'm going to make comics, that'll be cheaper and easier, and I get to do everything. I think I totally lost track of
When I met you, you had drawn hands for like 3 months.
Oh, yes, and you yes, had a stack yes. So I was into anime and manga, and kind of like my way back into American comics was finding, you know, Paul Pope and like Brandon Graham's King City and like everything by Becky Cloonan, the Moon and Ba brothers. So like I kind of came back internationally through. So I was super into, you know, the Paul Pope way of like the sensual drawings of hands. So I think I forever got Adam hooked on just from that early time when we started hanging.
Well, I think it's about like Adam talking early on, kind of the character work you do in those first couple scenes. And I think what's brilliant about that is it's character work and it's story building, almost in a way you're tricking, again, like the way this story starts out, it feels like it's going one way and then it goes a completely different way. But all the work you've put in early on, you still get all the stuff from Myers, but it was like working different. And then it carries over into that. And I think very much kind of the same with around that point in the story, there's a lot of the quiet scenes with Myers kind of reflecting in his house. And I think a lot of that, like, there's a few like 9-panel grids, and then there's like a bunch where there's like slanted panels that Matt's doing. It's like a lot of that is in silence. And like, again, a lot of that is kind of carrying the character work as well. Like, you guys do a lot to, I think, lean on each other. And also then what that does is the type of books that I like is where, again, you're not like hand holding the reader through it. They're like progressing with them. And I think you guys do that very well together. Is that something that has come? I went back and was rereading, flipping through Valhalla before, and kind of like where you guys were in that. And that, is that something, a better kind of relationship and dialogue you guys have had going into this one? This one feels like really, again, the two of you working on kind of a new level of what you do best. It's very, again, this is very like cinematic. And I think that only works if you have a writer and artist who are on the same page in the way they want to tell the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the reason Matt and I work well together is because we both like the same kind of stories and we both like telling stories in similar ways. And so I think it just kind of like works pretty easily for us. One second. I need to let my dog out. One second. You need to go outside? Come on.
He said that whenever he's just taking off his shoes. He doesn't have a dog.
What were we talking about? The character acting. So one of my big ideas when Matt and I started working together, we did like this 8-page short story. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could do a comic where people didn't know it was a writer and an artist, but it kind of felt more like one person doing it. And so, I mean, I think that's, at least for me, is like, I just don't want to overwrite. And I mean, it's you're working in comics and it's a visual medium and a good portion of that is art. I mean, if not like most of it, I think Dave Baker once said, like, when he turns in a script, he's only done 30% of the work that's getting done in comics. Like, there's still the art, there's still the letters, there's still coloring. I mean, there's still so much more to do. And it's like, yeah, you're a part of it, but I don't think I should like overshadow anything, you know? It's a visual medium. Like, there should be silent beats, there should be parts, especially if people aren't walking around talking to themselves all the time. That kills it in a book for me, if someone is like really reflecting internally about what just happened to them. It's like, just show it, just show them thinking about it.
I can't believe they just said that to me. Yeah, well, I think that we're lucky though, because we have the ability to, you know, make it look like there's one person, because we got all of our habits set in place while we were like living. You know, we were roommates and best friends, and we would go see the same movies together and all that stuff. Like, we only don't live together because, like, he has a partner and I have a wife now, you know, like, so like, I think that when we did Long Walk, we had a big advantage that a lot of people don't have in comics, which is the ability to kind of be making it in the same space as the other person. And now that we don't do that so much anymore, I think since we have that foundation, now we can lean on each other. He can, you know, give me stuff that is very character heavy, and it will make me very angry because it's very difficult, and I will like scribble things in the script, and like sometimes I'll text him and just be like, this won't fucking work, there's no way this will work, and then like he won't, like before he even responds, like I feel bad and I try and think of a way to work, and then it's like, oh yeah, no, that's gonna work really well, I'm sorry, I apologize. But you know, like we have that shorthand together, just in life. Best man works.
With kind of, again, you guys going on, I know, like, Adam, I think in between you had, like, the storytellers, and then I'm blanking because it's... looking again, going back in Valhalla to now, like, even Matthew referencing the Paul Pope, like, you see the, like, very... like brushstrokiness of Paul Pope in, I think, Valhalla. And this is like very tight and very refined. I think it, again, like this is like for both of you, like a step up. And I want to say it sounds bad because I loved Valhalla. Like this is like,
you can say it's better. Working. No, we appreciate it because it is. You
know, we agree.
It's our first book. I look at it and it's, you know, I can see how I'm objectively better drawing now than I was on that first book. So I think it's our storytelling is better. And I think that we made this book with the intent of never flexing this cheap again. Because like it's not a sustainable size book to make and make other things. Like you were saying, Adam's done several things since Long Walk. But I've really only it took me three. So like, and with good reason, like, you know, we wanted this, we were willing to let this stew for as long as it needed to, you know, be like, this is our big real debut book, I feel like. Those are my thoughts.
What do you feel like for both of you, again, kind of, I think the more kind of experimental layouts you do, and again, I think the pacing and the character development in this with Adam, what do you guys think is like kind of your biggest growth as creators from that to this, that you kind of carried over into this work?
Oh man. I don't know. I think it's just an overall sense of being better. I mean, it's never good enough, right? Like I remember watching Jamie Hewlett draw these vodka bottles. I can't remember which company it was, but he did a different decade illustration for like, you know, five or six different vodkas. And they were all just
it's
beautiful.
News when Jamie Hewlett doesn't he just draw the bottle. And it's like, yeah. I remember that day.
It was amazing. There was a mod one that was incredible. But
I remember those too.
Yeah. He talked about how he talked about how he didn't like any of them. And they were all, you know, incredible. but it's, you finish a thing and you just see all the stuff that you would like to change about it. And as much as I am a fan of never going back and fixing stuff, you should, I feel at least, you should always just try to do the next thing better. So while there are things that I look at in Long Walk that I know aren't as good as they could have been, and now looking back at Downriver People, I'm like, I could have done this better. But the idea is I'm just going to try to do better next time. Like, I'm going to do better on the next book, and I won't get it right, but then I'll try on the next one. So for me, it's like, I think I have gotten better, but I think there's still a shit ton of work to do.
Well, that's the thing too, because it's like you want to do something different. And so inevitably it's going to be on the fringe of popular, not always. Sometimes you do something different and everyone loves it and you become an amazing hit. But for regular humans, if you're trying to do something different, the establishment, it doesn't really want you to do that because it's set up for something else. So, you know, we wanted to do a 200 page book, and like, publishers actually don't like to do that, ideally, because it's not a good page range. You know, it bumps up the price of printing. If you do, like, that's why the book is soft cover, because if it was hardcover, it'd be like a $35 book or sell it. It would just be like a tome. So I don't know. I feel like, again, I lost track of where I was going with that. So. My bad.
No, and I, when I saw Archaea, it was under the Archaea, right? Which, like, that was always confusing to me, because originally I remember them being separate from Boom, mm-hmm. and then I don't know if they were always actually separate, but they were like a separate entity. And then I think Boom bought them, and they've continued to push out. But like, for me, like, I like a lot of, oh god, yeah. So well, that was like, so then, like, I still think of them as like the prestige, like, even now that it's Boom, like, I feel like that's the prestige, like, title for them. Like, when they put those stuff out, that's that. So they put out really nice hardcovers. I was like, they stiff them on the hardcover, but, you know, maybe it sells well. We get a, like,
well, I think if we did it shorter, we would have gotten a beautiful hardcover.
But, so it's Matt's fault why we don't. Why I don't have a hardcover.
Yeah, it was those 20 pages, man, really just, well, it was probably my fault being like, hey, dude, figure this out. And it's like, well, it's going to take 3 pages.
But, anyway, yeah, I vaguely remember what I was getting at, but, I don't know. I think for us, this is probably like the big single book we're going to do for a while. I think anything else we do would probably have to be like some sort of series or just smaller in general. But I do, like, we were both really dead set on being like, you know, we don't care how long it takes. We don't care how much, you know, page rates we get for the book. You know, 'cause the more pages you do, the less, the lower your page rate goes, you know, just to, you know, math wise. And we're like, we're going to put it out there and then we'll try and be responsible. So this is our big, like, just putting everything out there that we'll be more grown, probably.
Well, so looking at, I mean, both this and Valhalla, both of these are very kind of rooted in kind of these, like, deep emotional, whether it is trauma or kind of like coming of age or finding yourself and really kind of tackling the past, and obviously this one has kind of the horror tinge to it, and then I feel like Valhalla kind of that fantasy, like, surrealist tinge to it. For you guys, I mean, what makes the medium of comics and, I guess, quote unquote graphic novels the thing to kind of tackle those ideas for you? And obviously, again, like, I mean, if you want to make money, make Invincible or something stupid like that. Like, why? And I think
make Invincible.
Yeah. But for you guys who kind of have tackled these, I think, big ideas, and I think the things you work through in this book specifically, either the ideas of suicide or dementia, like any of that stuff that you guys kind of touch upon, like, why is this kind of the medium that works best for you guys to kind of tell those stories?
I think it's because it's, I mean, the easy answer is it's because it's the best medium. Like, comics is still my favorite medium of storytelling, story input and output. I just adore it. But there is also a sense of suspension of disbelief from the reader. Like with Long Walk, whenever this little girl goes up to this guy and says, "Hey, I'm a Valkyrie," since you're reading a comic book, there's a part of you that will wonder if she's telling the truth. Whereas if it was, you know, a TV show or a movie, you would just be like, oh, this guy has met this insane lost kid and it's about getting her home. But with comics, because Thor exists in, you know, this, then you just kind of like go with it. And so Downriver People has a lot about like dementia and suicide and all that jazz. But there is also, I remember Matt and I having a conversation of, you know, what does a god's origin story look like? And what does that birth look like? Am I frozen? Are you guys there? I just said some insightful shit.
It was super deep. I was just trying to get some
No, I didn't know. It got like really quiet on my phone. So I wasn't sure if I froze and was just talking into the nothingness like those characters.
You had
I
us,
hate.
But then you dropped us because you broke.
But no, so, and I think when you tell a story like that, comics just works for it and it lends itself to those type of stories because comics are, I mean, it's a medium and it can be used however the people are making it use it, and you should just do it however you like. So that's like a really long way to say what I said at the start, which was comics are just the best.
For, I agree with those things. For me, I mentioned earlier, I started off wanting animation because I was obsessed with anime, Miyazaki, and, you know, Cowboy Bebop and Neon Genesis. And I got obsessed with all of the animators that were working on each of those movies separately. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be an animator. That's the coolest. But at the same time, like, I also wanted to do all of the backgrounds. The backgrounds in Miyazaki movies are amazing. And then I wanted to, you know, basically do every aspect of it. And kind of the more I learned about animation, the more I realized that I was not going to make that happen the way I fantasized, you know, like I would go and I get to make everything and it's great. And so I kind of pivoted over to comic because of that, but it, you know, it wasn't really like, I don't feel like I'm switching over to a lesser craft or anything. It's more like I'm switching over to something where I do play a little bit in every avenue of making a story happen visually, you know, in the background.
I mean, that's something to like looking at it. The stuff at the end, I think, would only really work in comics, or at least effectively. And I think we see this a lot in as people try to adapt things. Like, I mean, obviously there's this suspension of disbelief, but like very few mediums have that ability to work together so well. Obviously with prose, you're kind of limited by words, but then you're limited by the people's imagination. Like if you can't imagine something, so you really like it's at the will of the reader. And then again, in film, only kind of what you present, you can't really move out of what is able to be on screen. So I think that's why I think horror is so hard to pull off in comics. But at the same time, if you can do it well, it's one of the best mediums to do it in because you have the ability to kind of play with it. I mean, obviously there's the control of the reader, how fast and if they want to skip ahead and stuff like that. But like, I think there's something you do in this book. And again, giving Matt some extra pages to really like, there's, you know, there's time to breathe in things. Which, you know, as a reader, you think, oh, like, this is a black page. Like, that is, like, you know, that is tension building. That is, like, filler for that. And, like, you can only really do that in comics.
Yeah, and that's something you can really only do in a graphic novel, most likely. Because I can't imagine a publisher letting us use, or even a writer, letting me have two completely black pages, you know. In the middle of it, not in the middle, but in, you know, in a story, because that's precious real estate, you know, when you're doing a series. So yeah, I think that we, you know, I talked about animation and it may sound like I, you know, I'm drawing a comic as if it were animation, but it's still incredibly different the way you have to plan out the scenes and everything. I've never been an animator, but yeah, there's definitely a lot more things you have to take into account, and things you can't take for granted, because you do have to set the pacing and you have to set the tone, you know, with the lighting, the color, the performance itself by the characters that you draw. Like, it's on the one hand, it is fun, you get to do every aspect, but it's a lot of work, because you are doing, you know, a lot of different kinds of brain processes at the same time.
Jiren, you're in same place as him, right?
Yeah, we're both in Kansas City still. Yeah, we moved up here, I guess, almost 10 years ago. We were both living in Arkansas and wanted to move to a place with a bigger scene. And so we had initially thought about New York and Portland, but we were kind of grueling both of those, probably too expensive. So we went to Austin, where we had done a con, Staple, which is a great convention if you're ever in Austin. It's just all self-published stuff. And so we decided we were going to move there, but for whatever reason, neither of us had that very, this is definitively where we're going. And I had talked to a cartoonist friend of mine who grew up in Austin. And he said, don't move there, man. Austin is fucking dead. You need to go to New York, Portland, or Kansas City. Kansas City, he started rattling off all these people that lived here, and he got his phone out and texted a buddy and Kevin Mellon, who asked if we could crash up there and him show us the city. And that was it. We came up here, said that was where we were going. And I mean, I think we moved within like 2 or 3 months maybe of coming to visit.
Six months,
right on.
Yeah.
I remember we moved the day after Christmas, but I don't remember when we came the first time.
Yeah, it was like a couple of months after I went and took a trip to New York, because I was looking at that I was going to apply to, and decided against it. That's when we're like, oh, let's move somewhere together. You know, the dream everybody has.
The dream, yeah.
Make it big in comics.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. The only person I can think of in Austin, I don't know if Paul Mayberry is still out there.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that dude have a new comic in I don't know how long, because he did that
last stop on the train. He didn't draw it.
Yeah.
Wrote it. My kid was just, I think I have it. Well, you can't see it because my shitty, why it's dark. My kid was reading Aqua Lung today.
Yeah. That's such a good book.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the cover for that before it came out, being blown away by the colors and everything on that.
Yeah. Although I feel every time, and this is why I can edit an episode or something, every time I talk to Paul, like, because I know Aqua is one where Mark Smith's an interesting guy, and he never finished it with Paul. And then Paul did Dogs of Mars, which, like, one of the first times I interviewed Paul was that. And, that's something you got screwed out of with that team. And then I talked to him about Sovereign, and that was like another one. So like, that is like an ongoing thing. Yeah, he's such a great artist.
Yeah, he is. He was, that was artist that I got hooked on early on in comic. One of the,
yeah, him and Christian Donaldson was there.
Yeah. What was that one? That Tokyo something he drew. It was so cool.
Oh, Brian Wood wrote it. What was the name of it? Because his style changes depending on the project, but that one was like very pop art and vibrant and super kinetic.
Yeah, that was my favorite, I think. I
can't remember the name of it now.
Yeah, what is I've been reading Catalyst, which, I mean, one of my like early goals on the show was to get Joe Casey. It took forever. Not because like I had talked to him a bunch, but like he's like a guy who doesn't want to talk about his books at all, and he had like a very specific range. Like, he doesn't like to talk about new books, he doesn't really like to talk about old books because he doesn't really like to reflect on them. So like, when I did eventually have him on, it was like a broad career talk. But I think he's like the craziest guy in comics. But for this again, kind of this very personal book in a sense, like, what do you hope readers take away from this when they do get their hands on it? Again, kind of something, like you said, this is kind of your, like, I don't want to say magnum opus, but like your big thing right now, and kind of putting the staple on where you guys are in comics.
Man, I don't know. I think more than anything, I just want people to connect with it. And I know that sounds like a very broad idea, but the other day I was rereading On the Camino by Jason. I don't know if you read his stuff, Kyle, but he's probably my favorite writer, cartoonist, working. And he did this closest to probably he'll ever do of an autobiography book about him walking the Camino in Europe. And there's this thing where he's talking about running into other hikers, and everyone always asks the same question of, why are you on the Camino? And he says that he has this standard joke that he uses, which was, he turned 40 and it was either this or buy a sports car. And everyone laughs and he goes on about his hike. And that happens one or two more times. And each time it happens, he sort of narrates it with, I give them the standard joke. I was turning 40, it was either this or a sports car. And then the last time he does it, it cuts to this panel that looks like Seinfeld, where he's standing in front of a brick wall and he's got his hand leaned up on the microphone. And he goes, I turned 40. It was either this or the sports car. And there was something so goddamn perfect about the way it made me feel, like, reading that panel, because we all have those things that we sort of just say. That's this sort of canned response that we respond, or that we tell people whenever they ask this question that we've heard over and over again. And in this, like, really one beautiful morning, I read it and it just, I don't know, I felt really close to Jason. And it sounds stupid to be like, me and this guy, we're just the same. But I adore reading a book and feeling that way. And so, I don't know, I hope someone reads this book, and no matter if it's one of the more deeper emotional things, or if it's just something about coming of age, or getting in touch with estranged family, or remembering your childhood, or just thinking about the changes you want to make in your life. I mean, or if it's just the joke of him walking around looking for a bar bat. I don't know. I more than anything, I hope someone just reads it and feels the way I felt when I read that Jason panel.
That's pretty good. I can't follow that one up. I agree. That's great. I would love for a good connection. I don't know, like, for me, like, as an artist, I hope that, like, I like things that I can go back and reread or review and learn something more each time. You know, I love when I get something and I get done with it and it's like an experience, and I know that I feel a certain way about it, but I don't necessarily know why, and it makes me go back and check it again and again. And when I find something that, you know, the more I go after it, the more layers I find, then that ends up being something that is really, you know, enrapturing. So I hope that if anybody likes to do that sort of thing, that they find new things, because we put a lot of stuff in there to be after you've read.
Yeah, and I will say, again, having read it the first time, and I went in as kind of blind as I could. I read it behind the scenes the second Matt emailed me. I read it. And again, that first read is like an experience that I don't really know how to describe, because, again, I feel like what you guys do to set it up and the curve that comes, and it isn't like, as we're talking kind of around the twists and stuff, but like, it isn't like a twist for twist's sake. Like, there is, like, legit, like, one of them, I think one of the, like, great experiences I've had reading this year in this book when it comes to that and where it goes. But then on the reread, kind of reading it with that experience in mind, and then kind of, again, taking in a lot of what you guys do visually and kind of letting the book breathe and all that stuff. Like, there's so much to be had on, I think, multiple reads. And even to, like, Adam's point, like, I mean, I've talked about this on the show. Oh, what is it? I don't know. Is it July? No, it's not July yet. What is it? June. I lost my dad in January this year. And so, and I mean, yeah, I'm not, like it's, but it kind of going in that book and reading it and kind of that, that experience in itself was just like a nice experience reading it kind of like, Myers, you know, looking back on with his dad, and like you said, kind of pulling things. And I think it's one of the great things about comics or in storytelling in general is being able to do that and then relate it to a larger story. Again, I think you guys do an amazing job with this book. Again, having read Valhalla and as great of a book that was, this is like, again, like one of those books where I get like really annoyed that like more people, I mean, it just came out, but I'm like, like we all read this book, right? Like this book's fucking great. Like
it's been 2 weeks. What's going on?
Yeah,
I feel the same way. Trust me. Don't worry.
On reviews, at least. Not that those like really matter, but because I was trying to pull up. Like anytime I do interviews, I try and like read as much as I can what's out there. Like I don't want to ask any questions or like what's been covered. And I was like reading the reviews, and I was like, oh shit. I'm gonna sound like an idiot because like some good reviews.
There was a really great review that came out like pretty immediately. I think it's like Monkeys Fighting Robots review that was It was one of those where it's like, ooh, this person is smarter than me and they're writing about our thing. So that was pretty great. That was nice.
And for you guys now, is it kind of just like a cooling off and letting this one kind of simmer? Do you guys have stuff you're working on?
Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're talking about, though. We're both starting things.
Yeah, we're both starting things. We had been pitching some ideas to a publisher, and our point of contact left, and so we might be pitching again in August when someone is rehired and things kind of settle down. Matt and I have always talked about Long Walk and Downriver People as two parts of a trilogy that are sort of our Southern trilogy that are these very big emotional sort of magical fantasy based stories. So I know we've got one more of those, but we would also, and we were talking about this today when we had coffee, but it's like we would also like to do something kind of lighter and more
make people cry.
More like Invincible or not like that. George Lopez. More George Lopez. But mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're and that's the thing with comics is like you're always working on like 10 different things and then sort of randomly one gets picked to be published and you're like, oh shit, I got to work on this one mostly. So we're both working on stuff. I know Matt has some things going too. It's strange because like with a partnership like ours too, like I had pitched Matt on this idea a couple weeks ago and I was like, I was pretty jazzed about it. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And Matt's like, no, that's not it. And then he was like very, very apologetic the next day or like later that day, he was like, dude, I don't know. We can't do this one if you want. And I was like, no, man. I mean, if it's not it, it's not it. You know, it's like you kind of just sort of know when something clicks into place well.
Yeah, we've been speaking such a long time since I'd even had to think about the possibility of another comic, and I was like, "Oh man, like, is this the next one?" It's like, no, I don't think so.
We'll say so if it becomes a trilogy. I noticed reading Valhalla and then River People, because like I think those kind of take place in this kind of shortened time span. We see it's Rory, right? That's the main character. Rory and Myers, both kind of dress shirt, tie, long hair. So I think we need a third one with a guy experiencing something in that same attire. Maybe like a dress casual trilogy.
Yeah, but the protagonist is going to be a cat, but with all of those same features. Yeah.
It's going to be in Paris.
I was actually a little side note. It was really the book starts out at the wake of a funeral, and so he's bartending. So of course he's wearing a button down and a tie because he has to, because that's what you do when you are in that situation. But I was very aware of the fact that our last book was like the main character in this attire the whole time. So I was very keen to get him to some sort of clothing chain. So I made sure that happened like the next morning.
That is something I didn't really think about, but in Long Walk, he's, you know, on his way out of town for a job interview. So he's dressed kind of nice. Downriver people starting off at a wake, so he's dressed kind of nice. So it'll be some other situation that requires a character to dress differently, and he'll start off looking like Matt. The main character always has like yes. Matt's yes, hair whenever he started drawing it.
Look, I don't want to not take advantage of whatever reference I have growing on my body at any given time. So they get whatever hairstyle I currently have.
You put good use to it. There's a scene in this one where he's in the back of a flatbed that he's going. It looks nice.
And again, there's so many of those little things, like just like kind of logistical things of like, how do I give this character a good silhouette, and how do I make them different from the character in our last, you know, the last thing. And that may not be as big a deal as my catalog of stuff grows, but yeah, when you do an OGN, you have two books over the course of a decade. The similarities are they stand out pretty well. I guess that's just my style.
Like I said, I think another thing that stands out is the quality. I think both of them are amazing. This, again, is I was blown away. So you guys were on way back when I think I was asking about Ghostbusters. When I brought Tim in, he had his own last question. As we moved into the new year, he's done his second one. Obviously, he's not here to do it, which is good because I'd embarrass him with the quality of my internet dropping out. So I'll ask his retired one. So I guess, gun to your head, if you guys had to write one episode of The Big Bang Theory, what would happen?
I've never seen the show.
We've only seen like two episodes. We were asking for a year about.
I only have a vague understanding of what that show is, but it's Chuck Lorre, right? Isn't that a Chuck Lorre jam?
What he's asking currently is if you had to write an episode of Two and a Half Men, which I believe is also a
I don't like these garbage shows. I'll just take the bullet. I mean,
I got it. No. But I don't know who these characters are, but they're gonna do a nostalgic episode where they try to weird science their own creation of a woman. And then they get arrested for human trafficking, and the whole like second part of the series is just like a trial, or the episode. It's just one episode, right?
Okay. You only got 20 minutes, man.
Yeah. Okay.
If it goes well, you could finish that. You could switch to like an Oz-based.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is Sheldon in jail? I'm sure there's more. Sheldon Ross? I don't know. Again,
are those the characters?
No, there's Sheldon because there's young Sheldon, and I know.
Oh, there's another show too.
So there's like a prequel. Well, there's a show where he's a kid. It's called Young Sheldon. I've never seen it.
Is Sheldon from Oz or?
Oh no, Sheldon's from Big Bang Theory.
So I was gonna say, those are very different shows also. We could probably write the origin for an Oz character pretty well.
Yeah, we could do an Oz show. That'd be all right.
Yeah. I mean, the Downriver people was gonna be start out like with Cheston getting out of prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the original intro to Cheston's character.
Yeah.
See, now this is finding that out. That makes like for the perfect pitch for a hardcover re-release, because then we can get like, the back of matter with like how I would love to see the progression, because like that to what we get is insane, like so good.
So here's how I'm gonna pitch it to Boom. We're gonna add more pages, and then you're gonna put a hardcover on top
and
of
a hardcover
it,
yes,
and we're gonna charge it 75 diamonds a piece.
That is funny because I was really proud. There is like a really big Cheston power thing that happened in that scene that I think is really, really good. But
I remember that. Yeah,
it just didn't work for introing that character. It didn't work for the rhythm of the story. And then I kept thinking about, like, okay, but I really like this beat. I want to have it in here somewhere. But then as Cheston, like, as I rewrote Cheston's intro with this sermon, I was like, well, this is a different character now. Like, it can't have that same aspect that deleted scene or that scrapped scene had. So yeah, but that, I can promise you that scene will appear in another book with Heston, maybe.
Well, I made sure to put, there is a recliner chair that appears towards the end of the book that has some very specific distinguishing characteristics that I have taken as basically pulled from our third book, whatever that's going to be. I have something for that chair. I got something. I'll tell you later.
I mean, if Boom listens, I've explained to my wife why I needed the single copies of Cowboy Ninja Viking, the two trade paperbacks, and then the hardcover. I mean, that's always, like, I don't understand with comic book companies. You're selling to a market of addicts, of people who will buy multiple things.
Just give, like, the people what they want.
Yeah.
Some of those sweet, sweet extras. Yeah.
So if people want to know more about you and you guys, where they can find your work and everything like that, how can they best do that?
I'm on Twitter, but I never use it. But I should probably say I will, but it's at A Smith Writes.
And I'm on Instagram, and I do use it fairly regularly, at Matthew Fox.
I won't do art because we have a Twitter. I don't think I've ever used it. I'm bad at promoting the show. At Kyle Overkill on Twitter. That's usually, I should just merge it into one. But the most important thing is to go pick this up. Like I said, most of the episodes of the show are just me using an avenue to talk to people about books I love. Again, I can't express, like, how much I absolutely adored this book. Again, I've read it at least 3 to 4 times through. It's fantastic. And I'm repeating myself, but, like, it's one where, like, I'm reading it and I'm like, this should be, like, the book people are talking about this year. And again, you guys were, because for Valhalla, it was Eisner. You guys got Eisner nomination, right?
We did. Yeah, actually, that was surprising. Came out of nowhere.
I think
it's a little, like, with everything, you know, life starting back up kind of this year, you know, it's usually when a book comes out by this point, we've got the rest of the year planned as far as all the shows we're going to go to, but, you know, I feel like it's kind of going to be a slow start, but, you know, that's the good thing about it, you know, being a big, you know, OGN is that it's out there, you know, people will be able to find it. Hopefully it's some.
I think there might be another Eisner nom or a win. I think, well, yeah, that's, I should say a nomination. A win would be probably better.
I would actually like to get a win without being nominated somehow. I just feel like inexplicably. The Downriver people.
Yeah, what is it? The La La Land moment?
Yeah. Where everyone's completely surprised.
But yes. Again, it's out now. Go pick it up. You can pick it up at stores, online, anything like that. But again, I appreciate both Matt and Adam taking the time, especially as I messed up. If you're watching the video version on YouTube, you'll see the audio one. You have no idea. I love edited it all, but I appreciate it so much for taking the time.
Thanks so much, dude. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you again, Kyle. It was a blast coming back, dude.
Fun. And yeah, if you tune in next time, we'll get back to Lopez talk. So I apologize to Tim. End it there.